Now, there's multiple aspects to this. Despite, multiple years of schooling, the need for basic skills amongst children in India is a fairly complex problem. It's a challenging problem, and it requires a multifaceted approach. When you have such unique personalities, to say that a one-size-fits-all is going to be the way we educate the children, we have a fundamental problem right there, right? Because the child's personality, learning style, aptitude, everything changes, and the way they learn could change. Earlier curriculum tends to be set in stone. In India, it is something that is still evolving. The new education policy has brought it to the fold of three-year-olds. I would strongly think that it needs to come down even less to probably a two-year-old. We divide the center into the seven zones of learning. So if a child was musically inclined, she could learn her alphabets and numbers through that. If a child is inclined towards outdoors, it's emphasized through outdoor activities.
Hello and welcome to a very special podcast series, Unusual Suspects. I'm your host, Gaurav Chaudhary. This is a series about unraveling stories of entrepreneurs, investors, and businesses, and professionals who are disruptors, yet not in your face. Their disruptions have consistently delivered on the purpose and the mission they've embarked on. Their values are as strong as the mission. While they're ruthless in pursuing their ambition, they don't stray from being leaders who are not just admired for the vision and relentless pursuit, but also for how they're building an ecosystem of believers who consistently push the boundaries. They allow principles to take precedence over ad hocism. For them, profitability is as important as scale, creating and leading new categories and innovations. In each episode, I speak to one such leader, talking to her or him or them about their businesses, lives, inspirations, interests, challenges, pivot moments and turning points, successes, failures, agonies and excesses, and of course, the little joys. It is as much about their personal life stories as about their entrepreneurial and professional journeys. Unusual Suspects streams on earshot.in, spotify.com, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, moneycontrol.com, and a host of other podcast streaming platforms. For this episode, I'm delighted to have A.K. Srikanth, CEO at CLAY, Centers for Child Development and Care, India's largest non-franchised chain of child development and care centers. Childcare is no longer just a place to drop off the child while the caregiver or the parent goes to work. In today's fast-paced world, balancing a career and family life can be a daunting task, especially for working mothers. To talk about all of this, I have AK with me. Welcome to Unusual Suspects, AK.
Thank you, Gaurav. Thank you for the introduction, and it's a pleasure to be on your show. Thank you for having me.
Right, AK. In most conversations on India's primary education, a refrain that commonly pops up is about the lack of basic skills among children despite years of schooling. This is a formidable challenge that policymakers, teachers, and education practitioners have been battling for decades. What's your view on this, AK?
Thank you. Thank you for that question, Gaurav. And I am completely in line with what you're asking about the challenge that we face in regards to conversations on, the primary education front and the lack of basic skills. Now, there's multiple aspects to this. Despite, multiple years of schooling, the need for basic skills amongst children in India is a fairly complex problem. It's a challenging problem, and it requires a multifaceted approach. Now, there are several factors that contribute to this challenge, and each of these aspects actually shapes the current state of education in India. So, one of the critical factors that I'll begin with is the quality of education itself, because there's varieties of problems on this. There's an insufficiency of infrastructure, inadequate teacher training, inadequate ratios of teacher to children. There's a curriculum which is fairly outdated. And on top of all that, teaching resources can seriously hinder, the experience of learning itself. Now, at home, the learning environment also matters because children from disadvantaged backgrounds, fail to get that conducive environment for learning outside of school. And of course, we all have talked about it many, many times. There is an emphasis on rote learning rather than on conceptual understanding. And this is something we've inherited from many, many years ago, the system of rote learning. The world around us has changed, but some of our rote memorization technologies that the education system demands doesn't seem to have gone away. And it puts us so much out of place when we get to higher learning. Because what we're doing is memorizing a concept, but we're not necessarily understanding what that concept is used like. So all of these are issues. And then in a diverse country like India, you know, a language can be a huge problem. The medium of instruction is different from, you know, the child's mother tongue. That leads to differences, difficulties in comprehension. So, you know, there is a need for bilingual or multilingual teaching, which, again, we don't have trained systems and teachers to be able to implement that. So if I was to summarize this, Gaurav, I think there is a need for more basic skills amongst children. It is a multifaceted challenge that requires a coordinated effort from a variety of stakeholders, including policymakers, educators, parents, communities, to, you know, improve the quality of what we are doing in terms of education. And I think it takes a village to bring up a child. And this, I guess, is extremely true when it comes to facing this challenge of, you know, the lack of basic skills despite years of schooling.
Right, AK. You know, it definitely does require a village to raise a child. And it can be tempting to straitjacket the issue into a linear problem, concluding that children do not acquire these skills because of lack of attention and concentration. At the same time, it would also be skewed or rather biased if one were to bucket this problem as a binary function of children's intelligence levels, or rather the lack of it. This issue is much more multidimensional, isn't it, AK?
You nailed it, Gaurav. It is much more multidimensional, and there are multiple complex issues rather than just saying that this is because of a lack of attention and concentration, because there are many, many complex issues that come up, which include the likes of a child's, you know, skill acquisition and development, which can't be just reduced to a linear or a binary explanation. So the matter of a child acquiring skills is multidimensional. It's influenced by a large number of factors. So if I was to mention what these dimensions could be, the first thing is no child is a part. I mean, every child is unique. No two children are the same in any way. And when you have such unique personalities, to say that a one-size-fits-all is going to be the way we educate the children, we have a fundamental problem right there, right? Because the child's personality, learning style, aptitude, everything changes. And the way they learn could change. Of course, there's the environmental factors. Where is the child growing up? What is the socioeconomic status? What is the access to education, especially quality education, family support, community resources? All of these can impact skill acquisition. Of course, your cognitive abilities of the child. Now, these evolve over time. So what are skills at a certain age might be challenging could become very accessible later in life. But I don't think currently that is being, you know, focused on as a solution that presents itself with time, rather than saying that the child is just not paying attention. And of course, there is the motivation and engagement. A child's interest in a particular skill, the motivation they have to learn, definitely affects the learning process. So there are children who are interested in music. There are children who are interested in outdoor play. Now, depending on, you know, how the child likes to learn or how the child naturally is inclined to learn has to be taken into account when we're saying that the concentration or attention levels of the child are varying, because the way we are teaching may not be relevant to the child's personality at all. So we'll have to engage with different teaching methods in order to be able to get through to these children. Now, one other problem which I would bring up is the issue of neurodiversity. Now, what that means in layman's terms is it's a broad range of neurological differences. So some children have learning differences or difficulties. It could be ADHD, it could be dyslexia, it could be something on the autism spectrum. All of these require tailor-made approaches in order to get their, you know, attention. There's the emotional and mental well-being. This can definitely impact and significantly impact what a child is going through, how the child focuses, how the child learns. How much is a parent involved? I mean, how much support does the child get from the parent or caregivers? Now, this substantially influences what a child's development feels like. Is there positive reinforcement? Is there encouragement? Is there opportunity being provided? Or is it a very one-dimensional way in which we expect the child to learn? The other children that come across in the same class peer interaction, if I may use the word, that facilitates acquisition of skills through, you know, a very collaborative learning environment. And of course, all of these can be melanged to say that it's not as simple as a linear or a binary explanation, right? There's a whole lot of factors which are at underplay, which have to be studied before you can decide on what is the best way for the child to gain skills or pay attention to the concept being discussed. I don't think it can be simplified in any manner. It is a complex subject and it needs trained people to be able to take on the subject.
Right. It also appears that we seem to be some kind of a learning crisis, particularly at the pre-primary and the primary school level, because government surveys have shown that an estimated number, and here I'm quoting the NEP 2020, an estimated number of 5 crore students have not attained what is called as FLN, or foundational literacy and numeracy, which essentially means the ability to read and comprehend basic text, and the ability to carry out basic addition and subtraction. And this is a telling piece of statistics, isn't it? That kind of demonstrates the enormity and the magnitude of the challenge. How do you make sure that children acquire the skills by spending time in schools? Importantly, what role do you see for preschools in this, AK?
Yes, it is definitely a valid piece of statistic that you quote, and it is probably the most important piece of statistic that says that, you know, are children even ready for what we are claiming to prepare them from, right? And calling it a learning crisis is not an overstatement. I think it is very just. But there are some steps that can be taken immediately to improve FLN skills, foundational literacy and numeracy skills amongst children. And it can be done if well-trained teachers are able to execute it efficiently. But there are certain points that have to be kept in mind when we address this. And the first thing would start with designing the curriculum itself. So the curriculum at early years is still something that is rather amorphous in our country. In other countries, the earlier curriculum tends to be set in stone. In India, it is something that is still evolving. The new education policy has brought it to the fold of three-year-olds. I would strongly think that it needs to come down even less to probably a two-year-old. So that curriculum has to be engaging and has to be focused on developing, reading, comprehension, basic math skills. That curriculum is the bedrock on which everything can work. And I think we have a problem right there. Now, the second part of it is once you've got it in place, you need regular assessments. You need to identify students that are falling behind and why are they falling behind and what areas are they falling behind. So that might need individualized support for that child. And so there has to be a continuous monitoring process, which allows educators to, recalibrate their teaching methods and strategies. It can't be a one-size-fits-all once again. Now, inclusive education, much bandied about, but still present only in a few schools, in very well-to-do schools, I would think. But education has to be inclusive. It has to cater to all diverse learning needs. In a country as diverse as ours, I think without this, we're not going to be able to deliver on the FLN skills, right? And the parent and community engagement. I think somewhere here, especially in the current generation, you have a spectrum of parents, one that believe that, my child goes to school and it's their problem to take care of things. At the other end of the spectrum, you have parents who believe that I've already decided what my child needs to be when he or she turns 21, and therefore this is the way you should teach. And I think it has to be more collaborative between the parent and the teacher, between the parent and the community. It's a triangle between the educator, the parent, and the community. And somewhere at the fulcrum of this triangle is the child. So I think all of these three parties have to come together to solve for this problem rather than, put it on one or the other. Now, obviously, preschools are very crucial in preparing children for this kind of formal education later, because it's a well-researched fact that 85% of a child's brain development actually happens at a preschool level. So it's if we are able to address these challenges at that level, through various means, through interactive and play-based learning, through giving adequate resources to such preschools, to continuous training and professional development of educators, bringing in technology into the preschool classrooms, and generally engage with benchmarking against data that we get from other countries who are doing this well, be it the US, be it Finland, be it Australia. Some of these countries have done stellar work in addressing all of these concepts from a preschool level. I think if we are able to benchmark ourselves and constantly and continuously improve our own methodologies with them, it can lead to a solution. But the one thing I will repeat here is that it definitely needs a collaboration between governments, between communities, educators, parents, NGOs. This spotlight needs to come on the early childhood education. You need to implement those teaching strategies. It's not just good enough to put them on paper and say we've got a great strategy. And it has to be a supportive learning environment. We do this, I can be completely confident in saying that all children will acquire foundational literacy and numeracy skills.
How big is the organized market for preschool and childcare in India? How rapidly is it growing, AK?
The organized market of preschools in India is only 20% of the market. 80% or maybe even more of the childcare market in India is largely unorganized. And this is because traditionally, daycare units or childcare units tend to be neighborhood mom and pop sorts of establishments, which have one prime facility, which is that they are close to where the parent needs that place to be, which typically tends to be the reason why the child gets enrolled there, because it's in my neighborhood, because it's in the neighborhood of where I work, and this works well for me to drop off and pick up the child. So there is a 20% and growing market for organized preschools and childcare as we are getting more and more aware of what an organized player brings in the life of a child. I think that segment is growing. It is growing very well. In fact, it's expected to grow at a CAGR of more than 20% by 2024. There's multiple factors behind it. There's a double income household is getting very common. Women friendly workplace policies, especially after the Maternity Act amendment of 2017, many corporates have come up with the women friendly workplace policies, and these mean that in order for the women to get back to work and contribute to the diversity of organizations, they are looking for tie-ups with daycares and preschools, and of course, the most important, we had the new education policy, which came up a couple of years ago during the pandemic, which is still being implemented in the country. Now, the new education policy, actually, for the first time in policies, has brought the spotlight on pre-primary education. And therefore, you could expect all of these to come into a format where organized players with health and safety norms, with excellent curriculum, with sound teaching methodologies are going to be growing much bigger, perhaps even bigger than the forecasted 21% that I was talking about in the coming years.
And please tell me something about Clay. What are the different business modules that Clay follows? Other than preschools, and how is it different from a conventional preschool, AK?
Thank you for that, Gaurav. I think being from Clay and having studied this market in quite a lot of detail, I think there are a few factors that differentiate us from everybody else. This is a project started by our founder Priya Krishnan in 2012, and when she started it, it was started under the guiding vision that it helps women get back to work guilt-free. And this was at a time when, this was 5 years before the new Maternity Act amendment even came into place in 2017. So there was a certain vision that she had long before it became policy. In fact, when that policy was being framed, I am aware that Priya was also a part of the team that evaluated the white paper on it. So we've been involved with this way before the government made this into a policy. But we are not an establishment which believes in, there's two kinds of models in India today. One is the preschool model, where, for the first half of the day, you take care of the child through various classes and the child gets sent back. The other end of the spectrum is a daycare model where, the child is kept there so that the parent can return to work. And then the child is engaged in various activities and the child is picked up by the parent or a designated guardian at the end of the day. Now, what we've done is we've said that at this age, learning and care go together. So our whole program for the day is actually designed in a way which is engaging and learning for the child throughout the program. We basically operate in three models in CLAY. One is what we call the on-site model, which basically is that we run the preschool for corporates who have the space to give us, and they have a space dedicated for children of their employees, and we run the school for them. Then you have what we call near work. These are typically in tech park locations where we set up a center where, you know, corporates who have a tie up with us typically tend to have employees send their children there. So technically, even if your corporate does not have a tie up with us, you could still enroll with us in these centers. And then there's a near home model, which basically is in residential areas, largely favored by parents who would like to send their children somewhere close to their home. So we have all three models operating. And inside the model, through a foundation development program, we kind of extend childcare to taking it to a safe and secure environment where the child actually thrives. So whether it's attention to detail in terms of what kind of meal plans are designed, we actually do it through a nutritionist, or what kind of enrichment activities happen in the evening, which we do through activity partners. The curriculum we follow is following a methodology of something designed by Dr. Howard Gardner of Harvard University. It's called the theory of multiple intelligences. In line with what I was speaking earlier, this is a theory that says that a child basically has a unique way of how to learn. And in our centers, we divide the center into the seven zones of learning. So if a child was musically inclined, she could learn her alphabets and numbers through that. If a child is inclined towards outdoors, it's emphasized through outdoor activities. So varieties of ways of inculcating the same education based on the child's need. I think that's what makes us unique.
So what is the CLAY Foundational Development Program? What does a foundational development program entail? You know, because I asked this question because you say that you follow a thematic approach wherein learning is integrated within a theme to foster your child's cognitive, language, personal, social, emotional, and physical development. How? AK?
So, Guru, how do we make the magic happen is how I would put it. If I was to get down to the nuts and bolts of it, it means you break up a child's day into bite-sized structured segments. And there's two methodologies that follow this. First, we've got the play-day approach. What this means is that the child is given the world as their playground. They explore, their spontaneity is encouraged, they live, they revel in each moment, they face challenges head-on, and they let their imaginations soar. But we also have, or we also champion, what we call the facilitator-led model, which means engaging activities like, you know, playful worksheets, music, story time, role-playing, craft, they're all wrapped up in large and small group settings. So fundamentally, what we've done with the foundation development program is we've divided them into these two ways. So our learning journeys basically have a thematic twist to it. So every month we dive into a fresh theme, and all activities actually are around that theme. So if, for example, people around us is the theme, we'll be chatting with children about communities, about community helpers. Maybe we'll even invite parents to share their expectations. So all worksheets, songs, stories, everything aligns with this theme, which is tailor-made to suit the child's age and learning level. So fundamentally, what do we cover? We cover a variety of things. We cover personal and socio-emotional skills. We cover gross and fine motor skills, cognitive and conversational skills, literacy and numeracy, creative and 21st century. So all of these themes are basically broken up in the manner that I just described, which basically is the founding block of our foundation development program.
AK, a broader question on the industry. What are the challenges that parents face in India while choosing a daycare or a preschool?
Yes, Gaurav. I think the first dilemma that they face is, when do you start? What is the right age? I think that's the first one which comes up to their mind. And once they've decided, yes, this is the time, then the question is, should we send the child directly to a K-12 school so that the child is able to continue there throughout, or should we send them to an early learning center or a preschool? Once those decisions are made, then there's a second level of decision making. How safe is the place? What kind of training do the caregivers and teachers receive right? Especially after the pandemic, I think rightfully so, health and safety has become a very important criteria in evaluating a daycare. Then comes the question of, okay, do we take a daycare near home, near work? Is my baby going to be able to sit in the car for as long as I have to drive to work? Or am I better off leaving the baby, you know, somewhere close to home so she's saved up the commute? Does the daycare have the infrastructure? Does it have an outdoor space? Does it have enough materials and toys? Is it stimulating enough? So I think all of these, and of course, there's also the question of cost. I mean, can I afford it? What does it cost? Is also an important parameter, which plays along with the other factors that I just mentioned here.
AK, final question. AK, is there a case to radically shift the pedagogical approach that favors simplifying the curriculum and placing the onus also on the teachers through monitorable outcome-based goals and letting children set their own pace of learning? AK?
Yes, there is a case for shifting the approach. You know, the traditional model of education is basically a standardized curriculum and a very rigid teacher-centric instruction model. And this has been, you know, while it has been followed all these years, it's also been criticized as many times for, you know, the preparation that a child gets for the complexities of today's world. So the approach you're mentioning favors basically simplifying goals and personalized learning, and this can definitely address some of these concerns. So if you were to break down the components of this approach, it would be a simplified curriculum, outcome-based goals, and personalized learning pace. Of course, this has tremendous benefits. It, you know, when you're focusing on skills, critical thinking and real-world applications, children are better prepared for a life beyond school, which I think is one of the biggest problems that we face with the schooling system as today, meaning they develop transferable skills to various situations and therefore are more adapting of changing environments. Simplifying the curriculum takes out the stress, not just on children, it takes out the stress on teachers as well. I mean, once the stress levels are reduced or removed, it definitely contributes to a more positive learning environment and it's better for the mental well-being of the child. Individualized attention obviously allows children to learn at their pace based on their interests, which will probably get them to learn better. And this will help address gaps in understanding, which also means you'll have to provide tailored support for this, right? And intrinsic motivation. When children have a say in what they're learning and they see the practical value of what they're learning, they're more likely to be motivated to learn and excel. And when they don't have a say, you have children coming up and saying, okay, I read about westerlies in my geography class, but where am I going to use it? And if they don't see the benefit of using it somewhere in a career, then the inclination to learn that also disappears in that case, right? And of course, lastly, the preparation for the future. So the modern world is evolving in a way where critical thinking, creativity, adaptability, collaboration, these are the key words of our society today when it comes to world after school. So it's important that whatever approach we take aligns with these kinds of skills, which are actually largely absent in today's schooling environment. So in summary, if I may say, the case for, you know, simplifying the curriculum, outcome-based goals, personalized learning is actually grounded in better prepared students to face the complexities of the modern world. So strangely, for facing the complexities, we are in favor of simplifying what we do. And I think that is that is half the problem solved. Of course, the other half is about how do you implement this, and that needs its own level of careful planning, resources, and a willing to change what we have, like willingness to change what we have, because sometimes I think that's where a large part of the roadblocks come from.
Thank you, AK, for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation and sharing your deep insights and perspectives on the pedagogical approach, on the broader philosophy of what needs to change, particularly the curriculum that needs to be tailor-made for Indian students and children, and also on the growing industry of the growing preschool and the childcare industry, and what needs to change and how rapidly it is evolving. Thank you so much for taking the time out and dropping by to have this conversation, AK.
My pleasure, Gaurav. Thank you for having me on your show. And it was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you.